Hello, and you are listening to the Mountain Bike Podcast. Now, I am not Neil Donoghue, that much should be clear by now. He has, in fact, left the building. So it's just down to myself, Rick McLaughlin, Rory Cunningham, and our self-confessed numbers man, Duncan Philpott. I'll just set a bit of a scene for you. We are recording this from the palatial surroundings of the bike room in the Hotel Garibaldi, where some bikes are being wheeled in as I speak. Just off the piazza in Finale Liguri after the last Enduro World Series race of the year, which was the Bluegrass EWS Finale Liguri. And what a race it was. Did you two enjoy it?
Yeah, amazing end to the season. I think the weather the day before was pretty mixed. We had our doubts, but sun on race day and the strong winds, I think the stages couldn't have been in better conditions. Some really good racing. We had a first-time winner.
Don't jump ahead
fresh,
in the schedule.
Fresh phase of the podium. It was good. I think it was a fitting end to a strange season.
Yeah. Duncan, you were shooting it out in the stages. How was it from where you were sitting?
It was exciting to watch. Everyone seemed to be giving it their all. That was for sure. You know, in the women's, well, I don't know how much we're meant to.
let's talk about the course first of all, because Finale Liguri, it's hosted an EWS every year for 7 years since the series began, and courses are famously tricky here, aren't they? They combine speed and rock, and usually dust better than ever. But as we said, with a bit of rain, so the Hero Dirt was out in force in the first two, but the second two stages, really, pretty challenging from a racer's point of view.
Yeah, pretty diverse course all round. I think the sheer number of trails they have here, it's always going to be a really good mix. The stuff closer to the coast tends to be your more tight, rocky, awkward, I guess kind of more your very typical Finale. And then when you get up into the mountains, you have the fast and flowy stuff and the real long stages. I thought it was a brilliant mix. You had the Cacciatore, the first stage.
Cacciatore's great, isn't it? And that is a really good trail. I think one, if you are coming here and you check out where to go on the finaleoutdoor.com website, that is one of those trails that you have to ride, isn't it? It's just fantastic.
Yeah, fast, flowy at the top, and at the steep technical stuff at the bottom. Yeah. It's got a mix of everything, hasn't it? It's fast, it's flowy, it's got the, you know, it's got rocks at the bottom, it's, you know, it's a proper mountain bike track. And that
feels like an own, you know, its own ride and its own merit, but took the top riders only, you know, just shy of 7.5 minutes to get down it, which I think kind of, yeah,
that sure it tells you everything you need to know about it, doesn't it? And it really benefited from a drop of rain from the day before, didn't it? Because we rode it early in the week and it was really dusty, really loose, very difficult to slow down despite my best efforts. But with a bit of moisture on it, different beast altogether. And let's dive into it and talk about the race. And then Morgan Schaar's first ever EWS win, only the sixth woman to have won an EWS. And only one of them's not been French.
Absolutely, Rick.
Absolutely.
That being Tracy Mosley, the only non-French female EWS round winner that we've had.
I have to admit, my money was on Pujam heading into the race, but Morgan made a monkey out of me on that one.
And I don't think there's any doubt. There's no doubt about Morgan Schaar's skill. Anybody that remembers her bottom section of World Champs, Liu Gang 2013, she took the field apart in the last minute on the most technical part of the track. I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit surprised as well. I thought she'd be strong on the first two, but the two stages in the afternoon, she showed she's got the fitness now as well. And pretty dominant performance. I think she won.
Pujan fought back, didn't she?
Yeah, she clawed back some time on those latter two stages, but not enough to make up the morning's margin from Morgan. I think, was there a mechanical from Melanie?
It was mechanical on two, I think, from Melanie, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, as we've seen time and time again in these races, the management of the bikes from the top riders, it's just amazing how those top five don't seem to get mechanicals.
The strength of a modern enduro bike as well, because the first, remember the first finale I covered would have been 2017, and it really was like a killing zone for bikes. Do you know what I mean? There was stuff breaking left, right, and centre, and wheels especially. Yeah. And now, like, it seems like, as you say, you see a lot of punctures and stuff
early on in the field,
when people are just maybe just hitting stuff a bit faster because it's race day. But pro race, very, very little goes wrong.
I think you're seeing a change, certainly in the last couple of years. Is early on, I think riders really were conscious about weight and roll speed, and we're trying to have a bike that they could pedal that also descended well. Whereas now you look at the bikes and, you know, they're up to kind of 170, 180 mil travel for most of them, inserts front and rear, downhill casing tires. You know, people aren't being conservative because the pace you have to ride on the stages is so high. Mm. I think for the pros, they've had to adapt to that. You know, it takes a lot more fitness to be able to pedal that round for the day. It makes liaisons tougher, more weight you're carrying with, you know, inserts, bigger travel, etc. But I think you're seeing that real shift in riders saying, you know, if I'd rather have a heavy bike that's durable and is going to perform in the downhills, and I'll sacrifice that roll speed and weight on the liaisons, and I'll make it happen. And I think we're really seeing that in the last couple of years.
I think we touched on it in last week's show, but it kind of feels like we're hitting a bit of a ceiling as well. And so any sort of technological gains that are being made now are quite incremental compared to those big things that stop things from breaking. I did see three or four issues yesterday as well with Bluetooth equipped stuff.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know whether that's maybe that's what's breaking in Finale now. Maybe it's not the wheels. But we need to talk about, we've talked about Char, we talked about Pujan. We need to talk about Estelle Char with her debut podium. And she was in second for a lot of the second half of the race. And it was only that stage win and the last one that put Pujan through in the second, but a really emotional scene. I think she's 22, 23.
Yeah, she was that dominant junior rider from years ago. I remember quite a curious combination of a French junior rider on a British bike van. I think she was riding an orange for years. Yeah, and you kind of like, you sort of, an image like that kind of sticks out because it's not the most common combination that you see, but she didn't really encounter much competition for those years. And I was quite surprised her first elite race is just kind of how far off she seemed to be. But then she came into this season and off the bat, top 10 at the first race, fourth at the last one, just building that momentum.
This is going to segue beautifully into my next point.
But I know what you're going to say, but...
It's funny because we have seen an enduro, like leading juniors really struggle to make that next step into elite with Killian Callahan, Martha Gill. You know, Martha, great result earlier in the year in Zermatt, but it seems like they can dominate very, not comfortably, but, you know, they come into elites in a real sort of bit of form and then it just doesn't materialise.
Well, it's interesting on that front with Antoine and Brady. You know, Antoine has maybe got the better of him most of the time, but it's always quite like, if Antoine steps a real wrong, Brady's there to lap up that win in the under-21 category, and Antoine opted to brace up this week, didn't he? Mm-hmm. It was sixth on the first stage.
Sixth on the first stage, and a mechanical on two as well. Another victim of stage two. But in the spirit of talking about juniors, let's talk about Hattie Harnden on Trek. Now, these are the kind of stories that this podcast and things like this are fantastic for telling. She finished second. She would have finished second overall in the elites had she been in the elites, and she was the fastest woman on the last stage by 18 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. And that, we should caveat that last stage, there's a big, long physical climb in it, which she must have gone up like she was on a motorbike, presumably.
Well, you've seen her results in sort of national cross championships in the UK. She's certainly a fit rider, that's for sure. Timo pedigree through and through, isn't it, right there?
And multidisciplined now.
Yeah.
Like, she's obviously got a strong, like Duncan said, a strong background in cross and I think cross country as well, but... Mm. To pull that kind of time back on one stage is pretty incredible, and she's got a very, very bright future ahead of her.
That's the sort of thing that would be a race-winning performance, wouldn't it? Do you mean you go into elites and all of a sudden if you can wizard 18 seconds up from, it's not that long a stage, that is a big, big margin. Now, somebody else who was doing a bit of wizarding was Jesse Melamed, second win of the season. You have to say... very Sam Hill-like in that smashed the first stage and then just didn't look back, just metered out his time gaps perfectly.
Very, very convincing, wasn't it? You know, you look at the time he pulled in the first stage, like you say, 10 seconds ahead of second place. And he just kept on going. I was out in the stages and he was last rider down and visibly looked faster than anybody else. And I don't say that lightly. He was, the first three stages, he was head and shoulders above the rest. And then I think it was nice to see that that sensible head, kind of that maybe Jesse, he's had the speed for years, but always had carried that kind of reputation of being a bit, little bit erratic and crashing. And I think, you know, for him to just tone it back down in the last stage and still pull, I think he was sixth.
He was sixth, yeah. He rolled it back a bit, but sixth is still sixth, you know?
Yeah, like a conservative stage and to finish sixth. I mean, what a result for him. And yeah, very much backed up the Zermatt win in convincing fashion.
I think it's really interesting you say visibly quicker because, I mean, we've seen races. North Star last year came down to 0.2 seconds, I think. You know, that elite men's field, very, very tight. But we've seen Richie do it in the past. We've seen Sam do it in the past. Martin's done it a bit too. When someone looks visibly, like visibly quicker, it's a big statement, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a shot in the highlights of Jesse on stage 3.
On his GoPro.
No, it's the one where he goes down that left-right series, and he just lumps the bike through it and just keeps going.
Yeah. I was quite watching the footage back, obviously, when you're out on stage, you see a fairly small section. We had a GoPro on that's on the highlights, and I think that's, you know, very, very impressive to watch. But he's one thing that really surprised me is he's not being super precise on the trail. He's linking up like sections that are quite far apart, more often than not, like corners where there's a lot of support. And what happens in between them is often quite erratic or looks quite erratic. There's a lot of movement, but he's just linking those up all the way down. If he gets out of shape, as long as he's going fast, it doesn't really matter. Whereas I think some riders maybe pick their way down trails, try to be too clean, and it's then not faster because they're spending so much time trying to set up into sections. Where you see Jesse, it's like, it's just A to B as quick as possible. If there's a little bit ragged in the middle, doesn't matter. Just links it 1, 2, 3 all the way down. And I mean, you saw the time he pulled out in the first stage, like it worked.
Yeah. Duncan, where did you see him yesterday?
Well, on Cacciatore, I actually saw him through just quite a straight rock sort of section into a corner. And guys like Flo were going for some pretty elaborate gaps, big pulls, all of this. And Jesse's just that, like, slightly smaller rider, very central within the bike as itself, and just sort of tapping on the top of all the rocks, you know, just skim through, no hassle, no fuss. And everywhere to me, it was interesting what you're saying, like, you know, if you look at his lines, they seem kind of erratic, but they don't have, like, they're not necessarily on the logical racing line, what you'd consider between the sections, but he looked so in control every time you see him come past. It wasn't kind of never doing braking too late into a corner or being out of shape. And that it's kind of, the styles aren't comparable, but the way that he never looked out of composure in the corners, very Sam Hill-esque.
Yeah, no, that's it. And we're seeing some very, very distinctive styles, aren't we? You've got Martin with a sort of bit, I always think quite G. Afferton, like sort of elbows down, sort of, you know, nice and precise. Adrian Day is just like, it's like watching Mini Nico and with a big pull every now and again.
I think you can definitely draw comparisons between Adrian and Sam and the way that they ride. It's so effortless and they're so smooth that it almost sometimes looks slower than it actually is. Just a lot of flow, and when the courses get very, very technical, I mean, we know they both excel.
Florian Nicolai, how impressive has he been this season for you?
Very. Yeah, I mean, I had him down to win yesterday and he was close, but he's been the only rider to finish every EWS.
Yeah, he leaves another year with that record intact.
Yeah, and leaves this year with, you know, 2 back-to-back second places. Mm. I mean,
what do you think it takes for a rider like that just to nibble over the second step onto the top? He's been close so many times. Yeah.
He's had a lot of podiums and a lot of second places, but look, he's got, everything's there. You know, he has the skill. I think, going into next season, like a little bit more time on the bike, on the new bike riding for Trek, I think that's going to benefit him.
That's interesting, because he said, didn't he? He said earlier, like in Zermatt, that he was struggling a bit with the fork and shock and just getting the bike to be equal for him. So I wonder if it is just maybe that's all that's missing. I'm really, really impressed, because I really think in Zermatt, at the end of last season, in that title decider with Hill, he just crumbled a bit and he just didn't look like he was confident. He didn't look like he was at the races. And Sam, ultra clinical, business as usual, took the title. And I just wondered what that would do to him as a rider. I thought it would do one of two things. And he's come out swinging this year. It's been really, really good.
Yeah, I guess looking back at last year's, to go back to that point, how many times have we seen Sam in that position going for a title? You know, it's not his first rodeo, should we say.
Yeah.
Whereas for Florian, you know, that's the first time he's been in that position to win an overall. And, you know, Sam, you look at his downhill career and, you know, having done it the 2 years previous in EWS, you know, he knew what it was going to take. And I think experience won over there. For Florian, like, we know he's definitely a season rider. I mean, he's one of the guys that's going to string a season together. He's going to be there at the end. Obviously, this year with it just being three races and no title, even then, you know, 2 second places, he would have found himself probably second had there been points. Mm-hmm. So
this sounds like something somebody should have worked out before this podcast. I'm guessing, Jesse would have won it. Florian would have been second. Adrian Jack.
Meyer.
Jack. Let's talk about Jack. Second podium. Still never finished outside the top 10 in EWS. That's what, six races now he's done. Yeah. Still never finished outside the top 10. Yeah. And that Canyon Collective, they just seem to be loving life. They all seem to be getting on really well. Him and Dimitri are best pals. You see them out all the time. Innes was here, although not racing, and helping out with everyone. And Jack's really, really impressed me this year.
Yeah, I had high expectations for him coming in, to be honest. When I saw he'd signed for Canyon, I definitely... made people aware that he was one to watch coming in. Yeah. Very, very, very skilled rider. I mean, if you watch him ride, he's got a very unique style. Quite a tall guy, but rides quite a small bike and really allows it to like move underneath him. Can turn a bike in a very, very unique way in comparison to others. And from what we saw here, pretty good surfer as well.
Yeah, no, pretty decent surfer, yeah. He rides... This is probably more applicable to Duncan and I than you, Rory, but he rides the way you think you ride in your head. Do you know what I mean? That sort of back end out, sort of all over the bike. Like, it's just great to watch.
We know he certainly never takes his feet off, which is contrasting to the two of us.
But... Yeah, no, tripoding's not a crime. People need to get over that.
He finished well, though. Stage win on the last stage. That's a physical stage. You can't just look at him and say, like, here's a downhill rider. Coming into enduro, they're going to be quick going down the hill. The one arguably with the most pedaling in it of the week, he goes and wins.
He seems like, because he's now going to World Champs to race his downhill bike, provided the snow stops. There definitely seems to be a newer vein of enduro rider. People like, we saw Eddie, Matt Walker last year, that they just ride all the time. It's just bike time. I mean, there's obviously a lot of training around the outside of it, but that not so much gym, road bike, like, they just seem to ride every day and it just seems to make them faster and faster.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's the most kind of natural way to develop that rider and bike fitness, you know? You know, the race yesterday for the winner was, what, 21 minutes? Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of time.
It's 15 and a half k climb before you got to stage one.
Yeah, that's a lot of time racing, and that's not including this, you know, 5 or 6 hours of liaisons you have on top of that. You know, I think you know, those, you look at your kind of Eddies, Jacks, Matt Walkers, I mean, Bernard even, you know, he's here racing. The amount of time you spend on a bike, it just becomes so natural. You just become so comfortable. You know, certainly when I raced enduro, like, just the sheer saddle time you spent, I'd jump on my enduro bike and wouldn't have to think about it. Whereas, you know, downhill, you need a lot more facility wise to ride a downhill bike. You usually have to go to like a proper venue or you know, somewhere with a chairlift. And if you do 10 runs in a day and the run's 3 runs, it's only 30 minutes of ride time.
Yeah.
and that might be once a week. Whereas if you're doing this day in, day out, you become so accustomed to the setup that you're running, and it just, you just jump on a bike and you crack on. Whereas you're not having to spend the first couple of runs getting used to it again, because you're just doing it so frequently. And, you know, I think it's cool that you get guys that can jump between the two, you know, trail bike one day or enduro bike one day and downhill bike the next day. And I'm excited to see how all those guys get on at Worlds. And I heard Pedro Burns is going to race in downhill for Chile as well.
Is
that's
he?
Pretty cool.
That and, is cool.
Would Adrian make the French section?
No, he wouldn't.
Oh, no, there was a bit of talk about that, wasn't there, at the end of last year?
I mean, it's a stack country anyway. We're going down a different hole here, aren't we?
I think Vidal might be.
I think he was sixth or seventh at the French Championships.
So maybe he was junior silver medalist last year.
Yeah. Day beat Bruni earlier in the year as well. So he's definitely got a strong argument if he wants to. I don't know, a nightmare day at the office for Adrian yesterday. There were a couple of big crashes, punctures. Shit. It just all went wrong for him, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he struck me as someone that could perform under pressure normally. I think as soon as it was unsettled from the get-go yesterday, that trying to push too hard and just sort of...
It creeps in, doesn't it?
Yeah, you see it happen time and time again.
We should talk about, we only had one championship up for grabs this year. It was the team overall championship, and Pivot took it, which is fair play, then big rides from all concerned.
Yeah.
Bernard as well, he's like, I think he's complained a bit online and stuff about the big days and stuff, but he did well. Do you know what I mean? Like those, you know, positions he was clocking were probably enough at the end of the day to push the team over the edge. So that's a great result for them.
Not to forget Charlie Murray and Morgan
Charlie
Charles.
Murray.
Yeah, there's a. Critical. I mean, Charlie Murray's a name. I'll be honest. Until Zermatt, I hadn't heard of. My word, has he impressed me in the last few weeks?
Where's he going to be riding next year? I say that he doesn't know yet.
He doesn't know. I'm sure there'll be a few people knocking, but I mean, sixth place yesterday, right behind Eddie. And as far as I'm aware, I don't think he's been here before.
I think he has, but in general, he's so new to cycling.
Yeah,
It's less than 5 years, I think, that he's actually been riding a mountain bike, coming from a free ski background.
Shades of Aaron Gwynn in that, really, isn't there? Like, he's obviously just got on it and gone very quickly. I think Chris Kakalis is going to have to get his checkbook out.
I think he was maybe 2 or 3 years into bike riding, and he was beating Jerome at the Trans NZ multi-day stage race they have out there in Enduro race. And you're like, oh, okay, this guy's clearly a good bike rider.
I think it's impressive. Like, I think, you know, with enduro, everybody kind of can kind of go fast in their own patch. But for him to come over here and ride something like Finale, which is nothing like the trails in New Zealand, and pull out of sixth place is like, wow, that's really impressive. And a good lad too. Like,
really nice dude. So really sort of really appreciative of everything around him. Like, you see him, like, he thanks the staff, he thanks the guy who sends him off in the morning, the guy brings him, you know, clocks him back in through time check. He's just, he's clearly loving the experience. But I wonder how big a part of that Eddie Masters is, because they're good friends, they ride a lot together. And I'm sure that if he was given the option to stay on Pivot, he probably would go for that. I don't know. But then you've got Matt has to come back. Matt Walker has to come back onto that team. Morgan Schaar's on that team. It's a pretty stacked lineup.
Would you call them as the surprise winner of the team overall from this season? Would Pivot have been at the forefront of your mind coming in?
I think losing, when they lost Matt Walker to, I think he did his ACL unfortunately, but when they lost Matt Walker, obviously Bernard hasn't raced any before. I hadn't ever heard of Charlie Murray, if I'm brutally honest. You would say with some of the teams that they were up against, you know, Ibis, Canyon.
I would have said LaPierre at the start of the year, maybe.
Would
have been
Adrian and Isabeau.
Yeah.
You look at the teams they were up against, you wouldn't have bet your house.
Well, that's at the start of the season, you still had Isabeau, you know. It was going to be tougher and tougher.
Rocky as well.
Rocky.
And Trek, like the teams
CRC,
are well-rounded.
Ibis,
GT. They've all got the format of a strong female rider, really strong male rider, and you know, someone else who on their day can post a good result too.
Congratulations to Pivot. I think we're going to have to wrap that there. Let's do this again sometime. Let's do a bit of a. Let's give them all a few months to move around and swap teams and jump on different bikes, and then we can meet up and talk about who's going to be riding what in 2021.
Silly season is upon us.
We should do one where we just predict. at the start of it, and then a catch up whenever it actually settles as to who's going to go where.
I'll go and get the dust off my crystal ball.
Go and dust off your crystal ball, right?
Talk to you all soon.
Duncan, Ruairi, thank you very much. And let's see you in 2021 for a bit more EWS.
Cheers, Rick.